Warning: this podcast contains descriptions of murder, assault, and explicit language that some may find disturbing or upsetting. Viewer discretion is advised. Murderous Literature presents Evil: The Science Behind Humanity's Dark Side, written by Julia Shaw. I'm your host, Porter Hymas, along with my co-host,
January Blackwell.
We will be discussing this book's themes, which primarily focus on empathy and the understanding of what it means to be evil. For more content and regular notifications of new episodes, please subscribe to Spotify. And now, without further ado, let's start reading some murderous literature. All right, let's begin our first book with Introduction, The Hunger. You want to start?
Sure. Basically, the introduction is just a rundown of what
this book wants to do.
Yeah, which includes not going into
specific individual cases, but
more focusing on what evil is and what it isn't, and how it's very subjective, and evil is not really a thing.
No. In fact, the author says at the end of the second paragraph in the introduction, quote, "This is a study of human hypocrisy, the absurdity of evil, ordinary madness, and empathy. I hope to challenge you to rethink and reshape what it means to be bad," end quote. So then this introduction starts out by quoting the famous philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, who is kind of ironic. She says this isn't a philosophical book, yet she's quoting a philosopher. But besides the point, I mean, I don't think you can really not get some philosophical sometimes with this type of subject matter.
With something so subjective and so questionable, it's hard not to get philosophical at one point or another.
But Nietzsche said that thinking evil is creating evil, and that it's not really inherent quality. It's very subjective in what we decide it to be. And then for you kind of wonder, does even really even exist at all, except just in how we perceive things?
I was going to say, I thought that was really cool because she brought up the fact that we call things evil, and yet we do the same things in different ways. Mm. And so it's really about perspective. And she goes into the fact that
if you eat meat, to some cultures, that's evil.
Exactly. And then to others, like,
it's completely normal.
Yeah. And it's all just about the culture, but not only culture, it's mindset, really.
And then this book kind of discusses the risk of what it could mean to address something as evil, mainly specifically with the idea of dehumanizing something or someone just because either we don't understand them or they just did one single action that chances are they probably won't do again. Just this idea of using the word evil as a single word to describe someone's entire character.
And she brings up the fact that criminals could go their entire life abiding by law, and the one day that they choose to not abide by that law,
we
is
label
the one
them
day
as
we focus
thief,
on.
Murderer.
When in fact, there's a million other good things they did, but
rapist,
we label
liar,
them
psychopath, pedophile, especially when people call someone a psycho.
Yeah,
that's exactly what this is: dehumanizing and attributing someone's entire personality and character and essence into this one word, because it's just easier.
I feel like it's a way to separate us from what we think is wrong and right.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I like about this book is how it's mainly focused on the reader themselves and not like individual people to like set a standard, but like to really look within yourself. And she even has these empathy exercises where she asked, how cruel would it be for you to be judged based on one bad thing that you regretted for the rest of your life? And it's not necessarily about asking, well, criminals aren't wrong or anything. It's about asking, why do we call them evil? Why do we treat them the way they do, not about whether what they did is right or wrong. It's about how we call them evil.
And why don't we look into the full story and the full person rather than the one thing that they did?
Because when we use the word evil, it's kind of just a cop-out to just take this one little thing and then just use that as the baseline definition and then not have to care about it anymore. Because you don't have to care about a murderer or someone who's evil, that you can just let them rot away in a prison cell.
Well, and the other problem is when you take one word like evil and you want to have such a broad definition, it's always up to interpretation between everyone. And so, as going back to earlier, evil to me could be completely different than evil to anyone else. I could consider someone evil for looking at me wrong when everyone else doesn't. It's too broad to use one word to define one person or an entire group.
Or one complex behavior such as crime or criminal activity. And some people who commit crimes don't even think they're evil themselves. So the main point of this book is to just question why, what is the meaning of this word? Why do we use this word in the way that we do? And is there a way we can change that and empathize to hopefully build a productive, more helpful, inclusive understanding about villainy or what it means to be and do bad things? Then hopefully use that understanding to prevent other bad things from happening in the future to each other. And then another interesting thing that the author does is that she takes how we've used this word so much, but we don't really look into what it actually is. Because we're still so drawn to it, because since violence in movies and TV shows has been increasing so much, it kind of distorts the way we think of crime and the way we think of other things. Like, if you watch the news, you have such low hopes for humanity and you think the world is full of lunatics. But really, how is it any different from today, other than we have so much information just right there?
Well, and she brings up the fact that not only are we more drawn to violence, but we perceive that everything, like all crimes, happen more than they do, and all violence is happening more than it actually does. And we go out into the world with a sense of low hope for humanity because we automatically think that there is going to be violence and evil beings and there's going to be crime, when in reality it's not surrounding you like you think it is.
And I think when we do that, that's partially why we don't really empathize with these people and really ask, well, why did they do these things that they shouldn't be doing, without just calling them an evil monster that can't be saved or helped or understood.
Mm-hmm. And she brings up the fact that talking and discussing evil is taboo because everyone wants to say this person did something wrong, so they are automatically bad, instead of saying, yes, they did something wrong, but what else is there to it?
Because we're
what
not like saying we should on? Just like release every criminal, because they're still like, you did something wrong.
No, not at all. You still did something wrong. You still deserve that punishment, but you still need to look.
That's a whole other different type of philosophy.
That's different.
We're talking.
But look at the full story, not just at the one action.
Don't just use a single word just to make yourself feel better and treat the symptom rather than the actual problem that this is creating.
Because that just creates more problems.
Or it just nothing changes and you continue to just lose hope by watching the news.
Well, and that's a problem.
Yeah, that is a problem.
So don't create problems, solve them.
Monster hunting. So another interesting thing that I kind of found is she's not only a criminal psychologist, she also specializes in false memories, which kind of bridges over into criminology with, do you want to sum up the letter she got with the one guy?
Yes, this was so cool to me. So basically, this guy, he'd been in and out of rehab, right?
I don't know. I just know he's in prison.
I remember because he was an alcoholic. And he ended up killing his father, stabbed him 50 times. And I don't know how he got a hold of the book or like whatever, where he heard about the book, he sent her a letter
asking for the book about false memories.
Because the prison library didn't have one, but he remembered, well, not really remembered, came to an epiphany that he killed his father because he had been sexually abused as a child, but he came to the realization that the sexual abuse that his father caused was not real. It was a false memory.
Implanted by the psychiatrists who were kept saying, well, you're depressed. You must have been abused. Well, the
alcoholism was because of sexual abuse. And you heard that from a couple different sources.
And so he started, and then one night he said the memories all came, air quotes here, flooding back. And then in a fit of rage, he stabbed his father 50 times and now is in prison. And he's like, I want to ask this book about false memories so I can, like, learn more. And so that was kind of crazy. And then it kind of, like, also kind of like, well, can we say that he's evil or just did this bad thing?
And that was her question, was that because he killed his father due to sexual abuse, well, at the time
alleged. Imaginary.
Is that evil? But then it comes down to, this was fake. He didn't kill his father due to sexual abuse. He just killed his father. Is that evil, given the facts of the case? But I thought it was cool because he didn't say, I don't deserve to be in prison because of all of this stuff is happening. He said, I know what I did is wrong, but I did it for bad reasoning due to false memories. He admitted that he was wrong. Do we still consider him evil, even though he knows he did was wrong and he's trying to get help for it?
And then, branching off from that, she talks about how in her line of work, she lives in, like, this world with prosecutors and politics, and how the public and the prosecutors, when something bad goes happens, they go on these hunts to find these monsters that have committed these things, and they're just on this vendetta for justice and call the perpetrators evil. But then she also talks about how, like with the false memory, can we really say they're evil? And the point of the book is, as she put, to give back humanity to a group that doesn't have very much and to give a greater understanding. And she also states that a single act should not define you. And just saying that, calling someone evil or just by one word that they did, is very oversimplifying for a behavior that is so complex as murdering your father because you've been given false memories of sexual abuse. And that calling someone evil is just an easy way, is an easy write-off.
Evil empathizers.
So this next book talks about an interesting concept that we've already talked about what it is with dehumanizing by using the word evil. It's known as othering. It's where you distance a group of people that you see as different or other from you because you're not used to it, and so you find it scary, and so you just distance that by focusing on their differences. And that can really get in the way of understanding a group that we consider evil, in this case someone like criminals or whatever. This othering is part of the reason why we have this problematic way of how we view evil.
Well, not only is it affects the way we view evil, but it also affects the way we view ourselves, because I feel like as soon as you start othering,
then you also people, start to idealize yourself.
Exactly, and you put yourself your on a own pedestal. Flaws. Exactly.
And then you're the standard, you can do no wrong, and that's a whole other slippery slope.
Which is what leads to the fact that some people or some, like, I don't know, societies, I guess, will...
Like religious groups who, like, prosecute other religious groups.
They're like, oh, Christian people are like, oh, atheists are horrible people. And atheists are like, well, Christians are just as bad. But the truth is that both groups, with their differences, are not evil. Neither of them are evil, but because
they're capable of doing bad things, but they're also capable of doing good things. But summing it up as one word is evil oversimplifies this complex situation.
And it... just
gets in the way
away.
Of understanding exactly. And what we can do to work and fix and come up with a better solution. The author called this curiosity shaming, because even if you know this othering, when you try and pull back that veil, people like say, oh, you must also be this, Like, if you talk about pedophiles, you must also be a pedophile. If you talk about murderers, like, I've had this done in my, like, I tell people I want to stay serious, people are like, oh, is that so? You must be trying to. People always do that. I wouldn't call it curiosity shame per se, but they always kind of give me that look of like, okay.
They get skittish around you, almost like you are a serial killer, and it's like, but I'm
Or like
not.
they get all weird or standoffish or judgy or something. Even my mom sometimes does it. They're like, but it's not like I'm focusing. I'm like, how? Although sometimes I just do it to creep people out because it's hilarious. But that's besides the point. I'm strictly want to stay academic for these reasons that this book has laid out.
Well, and I feel like curiosity shame, kind of going back to the fact that like talking about evil is taboo, I feel like hiding something like and like curiosity shaming, we are hiding things, but we're hiding things away from other people, and that's what causes a lot more problems, is the fact that we're not educating people about the facts of cases. Instead, we're just focusing on what that person did wrong. And let people be interested, because that's how things get solved. As we keep pushing off problems like
In fact,
murder.
some people like think that's like why flat earthers are so prevalent, because people keep labeling them as crazy, but really we need to empathize more with them and help bring them over to our side, because their cognition just like is skeptical of everything and they don't trust anyone, and we just keep reinforcing that by pushing them away by saying they're crazy, they're lunatics, yada yada yada, when really we just need to empathize and try and understand and help get them to realize.
And I feel like this not only goes for like crime, well, I guess not crime, but like murder, but like I guess like drug
The human
users. Yeah,
condition.
exactly, because it's like you start labeling others as crazy, and you start labeling others as
Psycho.
dangerous and psycho, and that just leads to less people getting help and less people wanting to help others. And that never solves the problem.
No.
It literally just
Just
pushes it
prolongs
aside.
it.
Exactly, it makes
It
it
just
worse.
festers. There's this HBO series. Remember when we were talking about The Deuce out in New York, that Times Square was called The Deuce? There's an HBO series also called The Deuce that's about that time period. And the last season, when investors start coming into Times Square and like get it to what we know as today, this one officer goes like, we didn't solve the problem. We just pushed all these prostitutes and gangs and all the violence associated with Times Square to the outskirts of the city. We just moved them and displaced it. We didn't solve anything.
No, you just pushed it aside, which creates more problems in the long run than it actually solves.
And getting rid of this curiosity shaming can solve who knows how many things we could achieve if we just put our preconceptions of what evil is aside, don't use a single word, learn to empathize and get a better understanding, and learn more about others and also ourselves and just humanity as a whole. Because sometimes when people like say like base people off of like their countries, like, oh, like when people like talk about how America shouldn't in the 80s when they were all involved, like, well, lots of other nations did the same thing. This isn't just unique to America. This is a human thing. Crime is a human phenomenon. This is universally. Why do we have to define them with these groups of different specific people?
Well, and I feel like also at the same time, like I just feel like as a society, we could advance so much farther if we stop shaming people for what they are interested in. If we let
And
people
stop
have,
othering.
exactly, if we let people have creativity, I'm not saying let people run rampant. That's
No,
not what I'm saying.
that's a
But
different
if
thing.
we let people have creativity and we let people go and study things and go and be interested in what they want, not only is that gonna let more people have an outlet, so less crime happens, but that, like, I just feel like more advancement would happen, because the things are getting, I don't know, I guess they're just gonna get changed. It's like the Enlightenment, when people started thinking about things and people started changing things. Like, look at how far that got us. Imagine if we could just, as a society, we could just let people do that again. Like, we would just move so much farther.
Because when we like start to do this, who knows what could change for the better? Because it just becomes this rapid movement, and we might have some snap, like all of history, when big change happens, there's usually like some snapback because it's moving too fast, but it doesn't go all the way back. It's still just getting more and more flexible. As long as we keep this not to do othering and not to do curiosity shaming in mind, we can still just progress more and more and more. And I don't want to say like evolve, because evolution isn't about betterment. and because most people think it is, but it's not. But we're not necessarily under the same rules as evolution and natural selection. We can go beyond the means of what natural selection wants us and be elevated in a way that natural selection could never give anything, any other living creature on Earth, because we have that capability in civilization.
We are a more intelligent society than when natural selection and evolution first started, but we could also be even more intelligent. Like, we could just keep growing. It doesn't just stop.
Like, there's natural selection path. just live.
Yeah.
Based on these traits that help you in this specific place, and that's it. But we kind of dictate with society and modern medicine. Natural selection doesn't apply to us.
We
keep the weakest of us alive for a lot longer.
I was going to say,
we outrun death. That technically goes against
exactly
natural selection.
We go against the odds every day, but yet there's still more to be changed.
Well, that is all for Introduction, The Hunger in Evil, The Science Behind Humanity's Dark Side. I have been your host, Porter Hymas, and my co-host,
January Blackwell.
And we will see you when we begin discussing Chapter 1, Your Inner Sadist, next time on Murderous Literature. Thank you and goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Murderous Literature. For more content and notifications of new episodes, please subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or Anchor. You can also find us on Instagram at serialkillers0011 or on YouTube under the name serialkillers the PowerPoint. Please join us next time for more Murderous Literature, and until then, please, don't die. Murderous Literature was created and hosted by Porter Hymas and January Blackwell. Produced by and occasionally guest starring Danielle McKay. Thank you to close friends and family for supporting this podcast. Some of the views expressed on this podcast are completely opinionated and are not intended to cause harm or offense. And some information presented on this podcast may change with time or be up for debate. All original content mentioned in this podcast belongs to the original owners, and rights are reserved. Murderous Literature was produced and created on Anchor.